an Asian American or an Asian leading man can be a heartthrob. You know what I mean? And
he's a good looking guy, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, he's amazing.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Teddy, we're back, Ted.
I know. Kids are back in school. I was out at dinner tonight over in Tarzana.
Ooh.
Great new Indian place. They have a place in Woodland Hills, and they just opened a place in Tarzana.
Right up Ann's Alley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was, and we were talking there for quite a while with Maria. So she was delightful. And I was like, hey, I need to get a beer. We got to go over to Whole Foods right next door. So I went to Whole Foods and I didn't like any of the singles that were there. Well, I had said I didn't like any of the singles. The singles that I liked there were all $25, and I wasn't feeling the $25 beer tonight. But I found this one, and it's a double IPA, and it's called, Bryce was standing there at the beers with me, he goes, 2x4. And I was like, no, it's 2x4. It's a 2x4 beer. And he goes, oh, like the piece of wood. And he's like, it's like hitting yourself with a piece of wood. And I was like, oh no.
That's what Bryce said?
I hope not. You know, I think that was what Frank said when I brought it over to Frank's just before this.
Oh, okay. I'll say your son is more in tune with the damage that this thing is going to do.
But Bryce loved the label because it's a wooden robot cutting his arm off.
Yeah, very beautiful with a Viking helmet.
And it's with a Viking helmet, and it's Melvin Brewing, Alpine, Wyoming. And it's a double IPA, so it's 9.9 ABV. So we're going to crack this thing and see what we're going to have here.
Oh yeah, you rocked me today. So while you're cracking that, we have a slight theme with the Viking.
Nice.
Yeah, so I got local. So Solvang is the Danish little town by us. And so I got brewed here, right here in Lompoc, California. Valhalla IPA, speaking of the Viking theme.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I figured getting back to our show that we would go with the, the local theme. And so the Valhalla IPA, it's a 1.6 ounce. It is 6.5 ABV and 68 AB, or I'm sorry, IBU.
Crack that puppy.
So, all right, let's see what we got here. This is going to be, you know, it's a full filler. Okay, so we got a good vigorous pour there. I like the vigorous pour because it always opens it up, you know.
Good ASMR there. And part of the reason that I picked this up, the thing that sealed the deal was the note it has on the side.
Okay, go for it.
It says, "Dear Enjoyer, 2x4 has a stupid amount of hops layered on a light malt base that gives way to notes of pine, citrus, and tropical fruit. While there are many great beer styles from the past, think of this beer as a beer from the future. Don't hate, party." Hashtag 2x4. So I was like, I told Frank and Bryce, I said, the minute it said has a stupid amount of hops, I was like, that's it, sealed. The deal is sealed.
Have you ever had Hop Stupid from Lagunitas?
Yeah, I love Lagunitas. Yeah,
yeah, that one's over the top. I mean, it's like, So if IBUs could be like 100 and say 100's the max, like 100%, if you think maybe that way, I guess. Like Hop Stupid has to be like, I mean, well over 100 IBUs. I mean, it's so ridiculous. Happy belated 17th anniversary. How was your time away?
That's right. I was amazing.
You guys went to Los Gatos, right?
So we went to Los Gatos. We went there for about a week, tooled around, saw, what is it called? Castle Rock?
I don't know. Is there, I guess there's a Castle Rock.
I think that's what it's called. Castle Rock, it's a state park.
Fraggle Rock?
Did that. No Fraggle Rock. And then we did the...
The beach.
We did the beach.
Monterey Bay Aquarium.
We did not do the Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Oh, oh.
The kids were a little upset. They were like, why aren't we doing the Monterey Bay Aquarium anymore? And I said, you know, Ann and I were both in agreement. The last couple of times we went, you know, on the annual pass last time, the kids were shorting the trip. We didn't spend all day in the aquarium, so they couldn't, you know, they were a little over it. We had gone a lot. So we didn't renew our membership.
Yeah.
So when we went up this time, they were talking about it and we're like, no kids, we didn't renew their membership. The last two times we were there, we only spent, you know, half the day there. So, you know, if you guys are clamoring to get out of there after 2-3 hours, then we're not going to get another year membership, you know? And they were kind of, you know, put out by it. And I was like, well, you know, maybe next year, maybe after our mission membership runs out, we'll decide whether we want to renew the aquarium membership. But we did not go to the aquarium.
But dude, as a psychologist in the children realm, like, I completely love that strategy, because it's like they're taking things for granted, right?
Yeah,
they're doing what mom and dad will just pay, we'll do our like we'll do our stroll through, okay, I'll entertain my parents by, you know, like gazing at a fish once in a while. The rest of the time I'll be on my phone, and like, you know, they won't know any different, right? It's probably like how they're thinking.
Yeah.
And then one thing leads to another. You're like, nope, we're not doing it this year. You got through in 2 hours last year. It's not important to you. We're done. And then they're like, oh, yep, they pulled the plug. I actually want to go. Wow. All right, Bryce, we need to really pay attention now, because mom and dad are actually serious. No, I think that's a brilliant strategy. Like, just call them at their game, right?
Oh God, that's one of the few wins that we have.
Isn't it though? You know what's so funny though with that kind of stuff, and it's totally true. It's like that old adage, you know, this is gonna hurt me more than it hurts you. And you know, yeah, you want to go to the aquarium. You know you want to take your kids there, but you got to stand fast and be like, nope, we're not doing it. And then they're looking at you like, but dad, with those puppy dog eyes. And you're like, I told you. And like inside though, man, you're just like dying. You're like, you've literally like taken 3 years off your life just for that one decision.
Right, right.
But otherwise, it was a good trip, though, I'm assuming.
Good trip. Quick trip. Then we came back. We went to the Hollywood Bowl and won some Hollywood Bowl tickets. So that was really a lot of fun.
Who did you see?
We saw a violinist, a world-class violinist from Australia.
Wow.
And he did some classical thing.
And
Anne's going to kill me.
So, Ted, don't worry, man. I'd be right there with you. So Anne and Audrey loved it. And you and Bryce looked at each other like, really, 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 Dad? And you're like, son, I'm sorry. We got to take one for the team.
I had a wolf pup tall boy. We had a bottle of
just
rosé
one
that we brought, you know. Well, I had the bottle of rosé. It was actually, do we have two? I don't know. We didn't bring enough wine for the evening, so we're gonna bring more wine next time.
I wouldn't think there would be enough. I shouldn't be so harsh on the violinists out there, but you know, hey.
No. It was a fun evening. It was a nice night to be out at the bowl.
Sure.
We packed a picnic. You know, I think the bowl is a good time regardless.
Oh, the bowl's great.
So yeah.
Yeah, no, the bowl is great though. So.
And the last thing, I guess, which I kind of mentioned in our open for the last replay of an interview.
Oh, your anniversary dinner.
Yeah, I went to anniversary dinner at Firefly, and I did not know this place existed, but it is a spot in the valley that's kind of like a trendy spot.
Silicon Valley.
No. We were down here in LA.
Oh, you were in LA. Okay.
Yeah, we came back around Thursday.
Oh.
For the violin thing. We had to come back a little bit early.
Right, I got you.
So we were down here for our anniversary dinner.
Was that on Saturday the 10th?
And on Saturday the 10th, the day of your race, I got your message for the race, and that's what I told Ann. I said, Ann, I gotta go and send Jimmy a message from the restaurant
from
about what I'm drinking.
The bathroom, or for the European listeners, the water closet.
Yes. So I was in this high-end place with the phone in hand, doing a voice memo in my thing and sending
it off. So both hands were occupied.
I washed.
Oh,
I washed
you weren't at first. The urinal no, with I, one I in one care, hand, one I took in the care other of hand.
Everything.
Got yeah. You. Okay.
No, it
okay,
wasn't like good. That. I'm not as talented as you are with biking and recording and doing all that.
Right. Yeah, so, well, I'm glad you guys had a happy 17th anniversary and you had a Blood Orange IPA and, you know, hey, like I said, happy belated.
Thank you. And happy not dying for you.
Oh, well, yeah, I didn't die, obviously. Here I am. But so Leadville coverage, we've been going this for 8 months now of shows, all my training and everything. So I finished, I buckled, and I got a 10-hour, 22-minute.
It, when you say you
it
buckled,
sounds like, it's like I when, buckled when I under pressure.
Yeah. It's like when I tell old people that I work on Slack.
Yeah. I got you. So here's a funny thing, right? And the reason I say I buckled. So I had a few occasions where people asked me if I buckled. So we're coming back and I have a jacket on they give you that says Leadville, blah, 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 finisher, all this stuff.
Yeah.
And we're like 6 a.m. and on the drive back to L.A. with the jacket on my back. And we're in the middle of Utah at like a rest area. And this guy pulls up in this van. I hear the window go, you know, the window goes down.
Yeah.
And it doesn't say like, hey, excuse me. It doesn't say anything. All I hear is, you buckle? And I turn around and this guy's sitting in his van. It's like a Dodge, like Sprinter van.
Oh, yeah. One of those big, tall vans.
Yeah. Mercedes type Sprinter van. I don't even know what it was, but it was one of those kind. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I did, you know? So we talked for a little while. And then last night we did the Lompoc Mayor's ride, which I was going to get into, but I guess I'll get into it now. But the wife and the kids were in the local newspaper and
I saw that. It was awesome.
Yeah. So we did the Lompoc Mayor's ride, and lo and behold, the new mayor is a cyclist and her husband races the track there in Encino and all that stuff. And and so she sees my shirt, which I'm wearing right now, actually, the Leadville 100 shirt. And she said, oh, wow, you raced Leadville. I said, yeah, it was last Saturday. A matter of fact, this is last night on Friday.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're recording Saturday, but I said, ah, I did, you know? And she goes, well, you buckle? And I said, matter of fact, I did 10 hours, 22 minutes, you know? And so she high fives me and that's stuff. Awesome. And I'm like, what city in the world is am I hanging out at like at the mayor's booth at like a farmer's market, you know? Like, I mean, I can never imagine Garcetti, you know, sitting in a farmer's market booth, you know, like with some buttons and like some kid tattoos and some stickers marketing the town, you know, like whatever. Like, totally cool, man, that, you know, you live in a small, like, you live in Mayberry and stuff. I mean, you know, I love that.
Yeah. I you know, one thing that wasn't small town about her is her helmet.
Oh, you like the brimmed?
She had the most stylish helmet.
Well, the funny thing is she's sitting there talking to everybody about wearing, you know, like, oh, you know, telling the kids, oh, you got to wear a helmet and stuff. And so some kids like thinking she's, you know, like all like, you know, snarky and, well, you're not wearing a helmet. You have a nice little hat on. And she goes, and she's like, oh, but this is a helmet. And she's like knocking it with her knuckles, you know, rapping on it and stuff. And you're like, you know, like the hollow. Awesome. Yeah, it was
the styrofoam.
It was pretty
yeah.
funny. But yeah, so I finished 10 hours, 22 minutes. I was on pace for a sub-9, right around 850, 845, somewhere in there. I told Clarissa, I said, you know, we were doing our pre-race stuff. I said, expect me at the first feed zone at about 3 hours 50 to 3 hours 40. I made it in 3 hours flat.
Oof.
So I get on with this fast group. And I mean, we put pedal to the metal and we just motor there. Then you go up to, this is at the Twin Lakes Dam for anybody who knows the race, the Twin Lakes feed zone. Then we go up the Columbine Mine climb back down. And I'm there at about 5 hours, 5 minutes. I mean, pretty much, I was like 5 hours flat, more or less. And I'm like, oh, man.
What was your target for that? feed zone?
For that feed zone, right around 6 hours.
Oh, so you're already under an hour under.
Yeah, maybe I was 5:45. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I was like going really fast.
Okay. Yeah.
Heading back the inbound, I got about 41, 42 miles to go on the inbound, and pedal to the metal, man. I'm just going for it. I'm like, I'm going to come in under 9. I'm going to get the big belt buckle. So I get to the bottom of Powerline, and Powerline is this extremely steep, though short, but it's steep section at the bottom, like third of it. I was already planning on walking, so I didn't want to, like, in the mountain bike racing world, we call it burning matches, or in the road racing world, whatever. I didn't want to burn any more matches than I had.
So you could get off and walk?
Oh, yeah. I walked on Columbine, too, because... Yeah, it's all rideable.
Oh.
But what happens...
But you have the gear way down and...
Yeah, no. I mean, like, the climb is rideable, but it's like this little narrow Jeep road. And you have people coming down, like the really fast people. I mean, like, I felt like I was going fast, but like the really fast people. You know, they're coming down and you're going up, right? Well, you have a lot of people walking.
Right.
And I'm riding. So I'm in the middle, taking this terrible line over bumpy rocks, and I'm bouncing all over the place, like in and out of the oncoming lane in a sense. And I'm like, this is way too dangerous. So I just hopped off and got in the conga line and started walking up. And once I got to a point where, you know, it wasn't that bad though. I mean, it was like 100 yards or something. And then, you know, you get back on and you just go. And I was following this one girl, and when I say girl instead of woman, because like she was probably like 21 or something, young woman, okay. You know, but I'm on her wheel, and I mean, we're going really slow, and she said, well, I don't want to go any faster because then we're going to catch the people in front of me or in front of us, and then we're just gonna be walking anyway. I'm like, yeah, we'll just hang out here and we'll just kind of cruise slowly, because the alternative is you're just walking. Well, eventually you catch them, you know.
Yeah,
but anyway, so, and then we get to the Powerline climb, and I planned on walking there because it was so steep from my recon ride. And I mean, it's rideable, and I did ride it the first time, but anybody who saw the 2009 Race Across the Sky movie, there's this woman in there, I think her name's Roxanne off the top of my head, and she had this horrible car crash and got hit by a car and all this stuff, and it was like this miraculous recovery, and she finished. Well, anyway, the woman from that movie winds up passing me because...
No way!
Yeah, I recognize... Actually, I saw her a few times on the course, and I recognized her voice, and, you know, I was talking to her for a minute or two, and she rides past me while I'm walking. So, but anyway, I get to the top and I'm like, all right, still on my game, still on my plan. All that stuff was all pre-race figured out. Now I hit back on the climb. I'm riding. Boom. I blow up. I'm done.
What?
Like, I want to barf.
A wall. You hit like a wall of...
Sort of. It wasn't like an...
Hitting the wall is, you said, you corrected me, because hitting the wall means you can't continue.
Right.
But you hit like a milestone where you said you want to barf.
Yeah, I didn't bonk. Bonk is like you just run out of energy, right? Hitting the wall is like you can't go on anymore.
Okay.
But I got to the point where like I had this like goo bomb in my belly, you know? So if you're looking at it from the point of you're just hitting the, you know, you had the gel, right?
I had the gel, yeah.
Well, my whole race nutrition plan was like bottles of sports drink, gels, and, you know, that's all I'm going to do. So I'm like, I'm just going to, every 30 minutes, boom, it's going to digest, I'm good, and it's going to keep flowing through me, and I'm just going to race this thing. Well, they don't digest as fast as you think they do.
And then you're taking too many of them on.
And then you're taking too many, and then, like, you have this, like, belly full of, like, goo, you know? And your legs and your stomach are combating each other for oxygen.
Oh yeah, you're at altitude.
Oh, totally.
You're at what altitude are you at?
Well, the highest was 12,550.
Oh my god.
The lowest was, I'm not really sure, like 9,500, I want to say. But the point is though, so your body is fighting itself for oxygen to digest food or to keep going, and the
right
alternative is it's like, well, you need to keep going, so I'm gonna barf out all this stuff so it doesn't bother you. I'll take care of you.
Right.
But it's like, but if I do that, then I have nothing in my stomach and I have zero digesting. So the alternative was slow down. Well, I slowed down to the point that my sub 9 became a plus 10, and it is what it is. So I think, you know, I need to rework my nutrition plan. And with that said, that's kind of implying I'm going back next year. So with that said, I get to the finish. There's about 5 miles to the end. And of course, adrenaline's hitting, excitement's hitting, people are cheering. I mean, the whole thing. The other thing is, too, when you come into the finish, whether you're the first guy or the dead last guy, I mean,
people are cheering.
They're cheering like you're the world champion. It's like, it's
give me a time. Like, what do you say? Last 5 miles. Is that how many minutes is that?
Oh, last 5 miles is probably like 35 minutes.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. Maybe 40 minutes, I guess. So it's something like that. You're going about 10, you know, man, you're going about 9 because there is a slight uphill into town. It's not steep or anything, but you know, you're not going real fast. So you're going like 9-ish. You know, 8-ish, something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say the pros are going like way faster, but I'm going like 8-9 miles an hour.
Right.
Anyway, so you come rolling in. People are just cheering. The town is like up for grabs with people going crazy. Like, I'm the world champion, you know? And they do that for everybody, though. So I come rolling in.
Right.
They say, hey, you know, may I valet your bike? And I'm like, just take this thing. They go, put it in the valet. I stagger over. I'm hugging Claire. So I'm like, oh my God, we did it. I can't believe it. Hugging the boys, I come around the barriers and I find this little grassy knoll and I lay down. Clarissa brings me like all this like recovery stuff. M&M's, recovery drink, coconut something or other, whatever.
Wait, M&M's recovery?
Yeah, chocolate and stuff. Sugar, you know? Okay. I mean, they have other stuff, but I'm like, give me M&M's. I actually requested it. And then there's like this coconutty like protein carbohydrate thing. It's
right,
you know, it's really like bland and all this stuff. And I'm like, water, I would have just like bar. I left it all on the course.
That's awesome.
So I'm laying down. About 30 minutes later, I start sipping on it and I'm just taking little sips. And I look at Clarissa and I said, so for next year. And then she looks at me like, are you serious? Next year? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. I think I know where I screwed up. We got to work the food, you know?
Well, the food is definitely one part, but what do you think about getting caught up in that fast group in the beginning? Did that hurt you, you think?
You know, the way I would look at it is this. Yes, it probably did. However, because, I mean, we were motoring. We were really fast. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is slow in the beginning, slow in the end. I'm a 10:22. Fast in the beginning, really slow at the end. I'm a 10:22. Like, I think it's all about the average speed more than it is where you make your gains and losses.
So you really think pacing out the goos would have done you better?
No, I mean, my plan was to hit a goo every 30 minutes. And what I did then was, like, sometimes the trail was a little bit too bouncy, a little bit too technical, and maybe I didn't get one for 45 minutes. So then I would double up on them. Like, oh, I missed one. I'm going to hit another. Like, I hit it at 45, and then I hit it at, like, say, the 1 hour. So I only had 15-minute differential, and so I'm like, I tried to maintain that 30-minute, like, goo.
Rather than extending it, you didn't say, like, all right, I hit it 45. Now, instead of at an hour.
Hour 15.
I'll do it an hour 15.
Right. No, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. But, you know, what I would say is going with more, like, when I had a banana. Clarissa, at the second feed zone, gave me a banana, and that was, like, 5:10-ish or so into the race, and having like just a little bit of real food. Oh my God. Like, it was like, compared to having just like the gels, like real food,
your body's like, oh my God.
Oh my God. He has to chew something. He has to chew. No, but anyway, long story longer. Going through the race, finishing and stuff, I think it was the nutrition side of it that kind of screwed me up. I think I'm going to do this.
But you finished. You finished. You did it in 10. You were bicycling for 10 hours and 22 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and here you go, buddy. There's the belt buckle, man. I got it on my belt.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, so there I walk into a classroom at work, you know, because I work at a high school, like I said before. Walk into a classroom at work, and this one kid looks at me and goes, hey, Mr. V, why is your belt buckle so big? And I just looked at him. I'm like, because I earned it. You know? And it, by the way, it is the most expensive belt buckle you'll ever get. So anybody wants to go out there and get it, man? Hey, I encourage all comers, man. It is honestly, and last statement, though, best bike event I ever did, hardest one-day bike event I ever did. I say one day because I've done multiple day, but hardest one day bike event I ever did. And you know, yeah, you could do it in 15 hours and just putz along and stop for a bologna sandwich at a restaurant or something, you know, but when you're really trying to race it and get the best time you can get and go hard, oh my God, dude, you just blow, like you blow, like you leave it all on the course. It's all on the course. It's amazing.
That's crazy. How many people would you say were there?
I think they said 1600.
I mean, racing. Not the people. 1600 people racing.
Yeah, I'll send you a video and I'll put it up on the show notes.
Okay.
Of the start. Somebody on YouTube, I don't know who they are, but there's one video on YouTube of the start of it, and it shows the race go by, and at a minute four, so keep an eye out for a minute four, a guy with a black jersey and two circles on his shoulders, and I'm right on the side of the camera.
That's you.
But I go flying by, and one thing that's funny is I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, wait, was that me? And I slowed it down. I'm like, oh my God, there I am. A minute four, that's where I'm at. And we'll put we'll put up a couple other pictures, you know, on the show notes and stuff. But yeah, it was great. We also did the Leadville Train, Colorado National Monument, which is gorgeous. We did the Dinosaur Museum in Fruita, Colorado. Grand Junction's awesome. We went to a lot of breweries there, and they have it's a cool town, you know, beautiful Main Street that they have. I mean, yeah, all around great trip. So anyway,
awesome.
Anyway, so.
And I'm going to put up some pictures of the food that we ate. And
hey, I want to see that filet mignon and frites.
Oh, it was awesome. That was the best dinner.
And what was the restaurant?
But I'm a huge scallop fan, so I had the scallops. What?
Oh, sweet. What was the restaurant?
It's called Firefly.
Firefly on Ventura Boulevard?
On Ventura Boulevard, yeah. And it's amazing because it's been there for 17 years and we've driven past it 100 times, over 100 times. And we've eaten across the street at different places and never seen this place. It's like covered in ivy, you know, like the whole.
How'd you choose
whole,
it?
It looks like a hole in the wall. I just went on Yelp and I looked for something trendy and, you know, appropriate for a 17th anniversary. And this felt like a good choice. There's another story about, I want to say 10 years ago, something like that. Many years ago, we went to Boa. There was this steakhouse in Hollywood, and we sat in Boa at a table that overlooked the swimming pool for our anniversary. So we were sitting there and we're having an anniversary dinner, and the waiter came by and he goes, you know, this is the table that Brad Pitt and
Angelina Jolie.
No, before Angelina Jolie.
No, Jennifer Aniston.
So Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt, this was their table. And I was like, all right, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but whatever.
I thought you were going to say the one where they did the dance in Mr. and Mrs. Smith, where Michael Rapole was doing the guitar work.
No, so this is before that, before Mr. and Mrs. Smith, because obviously it was when they were happier
for sure
together. So we said this to the waiter. We said this to the wait staff at Firefly, and they said, well, actually, you know, and you know, you're sitting in the seat that was most recently sat at by Jennifer Aniston when she was here with her girlfriends, and she was here with Chelsea Handler and a bunch of other girlfriends, and they were hanging out in this little, because they have little bungalows, and it was a neat table for six that they just were chilling at and having a nice dinner at. And I was like, look at that, we can't get away from Jennifer Aniston. You know,
that's so funny. And then you went home and watched Murder Mystery.
But I will say, Vincent and Michelle, our servers that evening, they were super cool, super into us, and had a great conversation with them. And Vincent actually chose our first trailer for this evening.
He did. Honey Boy.
Yes. Honey Boy.
So wait a minute. Vincent, how did he choose it though?
So Vincent, you know, he's chatting us up. He's talking to us. He's been in the Valley forever. You know, like he's been LA for a long time, asking us about our lives, what we do. And of course,
is he an actor and stuff or?
No, I think we didn't get into too much of that. He's been, you know, I think at these places, they're the high end servers. So they are, you know, proper like career servers.
Sure. Yeah.
So he was into the service industry and restauranting and being a server. So he was saying that, have you seen this Honey Boy trailer?
The reason he asked is because he knew about the podcast?
Yeah. So he asked what we did, and I said, oh, I'm in entertainment, but I also have this podcast where we talk about movie trailers and movie posters. And
perfect. Gotcha.
We don't talk about posters anymore, but movie, you know, media
and marketing.
And he goes, oh yes, media marketing. And he said, oh, have you seen the Honey Boy trailer? And to tell you the truth, I kind of taken a break from watching trailers, you know, to stay fresh and, you know, in a couple weeks off. So I was like, oh yeah, I totally saw Honey Boy, and I hadn't seen Honey Boy.
Ted, I don't think I ever got into seeing trailers.
So I totally played it off, and then he explained what it was, and it was amazing. And I said, wow, that really sounds like a cathartic movie. And he said, you know, one of the cards that is in the trailer says the most cathartic movie ever made. So it's like I quoted the movie just from his description
accurately
to a quote that was so accurate that they had put it as a quote spot within the trailer. So I was
beautiful.
And then, you know, like Shia LaBeouf's, you know, I guess we could get into it. This is my segue.
Well, that's what the point, right?
What did you think of Honey Boy?
You know, Honey Boy, I love the start.
Mm-hmm. Not a trailer to the trailer.
No, exactly. And that's my exact point is what I love so much about the start and the beginning of it is that it's not a trailer to the trailer. And yet it hooked me.
Oh, it's a total hook.
It got me asking, what is this about? I'm expecting it to be a trailer to the trailer just because we've become accustomed to them. And then it just kind of keeps rolling through. And then I slowed down and I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back and restart this. I was about halfway through. I didn't finish it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I'm going to restart this and watch it as though it's the trailer without a trailer to the trailer, which in fact it is. And then I thought, okay, this is what a good trailer cutter or a good trailer editor it does is that they take the information, they take the trailer, they take all the cuts and everything, and they use that information, whatever it is that's given to them, to tell the best story that they can. And that story is what hooks me, not some cheap one-liner or a thrill scene or something, when in fact, like, the one-liner and the thrill scene were the start of it, but that's exactly what hooked me. I thought the start was amazing.
And the start of this trailer, it does what the trailer is supposed to be doing in a insincere way.
Yes.
This is the most organic way to do it. It's a direct call to action to the audience member to stop and to wait.
For right? Sure.
We want you to stop and wait and stop doing other things and look straight at me and look straight at this piece of art that I'm going to showcase for you over the next couple of minutes.
And it starts off too with you asking what's going on, right?
What's going on?
Oh my God, there's a plane crash, something happened. And then like, once it gets into it, I mean, the first few seconds.
Then you're like Transformers, you know, once your cognitive mind takes over and, you know, it takes you like a minute to figure out, oh, that was from Transformers when Shia was in, you know what I mean? So you might have not even known that.
Well, or the way I looked at it was, okay, here we are in this like plane crash, whatever it is. And then when he flies back and then you see him on the cable, you're like, oh, it's some sort of an acting killing scene.
Right.
And then you start, you know, your brain starts working and you start associating to the things that you know, because that's kind of how the brain works. You start associating to these other things like, he must be an actor. This is going to be a role he's playing as his character. And, you know, and you start like kind of looking for other cues and so on within the trailer. But the other side I liked about it is when he gets hit with the pie in the face as a child and flies backward. It's like
a callback. Yeah.
A later in the movie that's a premonition to the future him, you know? And I mean, I thought that was great the way, you know, the movie plays out. But you're right, though. I mean, it's so like, it starts off extremely action, comedic, and its ending is kind of somber and sad. I mean,
It just tugs on the heartstrings. Like, I you know, like, as a fan of films and filmmaking, and it almost, and as a parent of children who want to be actors, who have done some, you know, acting and things like that, it really questions all the motivations of everyone around it, you know. And we tell our kids all the time, like, this is a lot of work for everyone involved.
Yeah.
So let's not do this because anyone has to do this. You know what I mean? Mommy doesn't have to drive you around, you know what I mean? We don't have to.
So is that like the Leadville? Let's not do this because we have to. It's a lot of work for everybody.
Exactly. Right. But it's almost like once you've set up the system to be the machine that is a successful child actor, it turns into this machine. And, you know, you kind of have a whole structure of familial economics set up around it. And it can be as sad as this, or it can be as happy as something else. But this was just so very close to everything that you know, that we see and hear about. And it's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, you know, heartbreaking. That's a good, yeah, I didn't think of it that way, but I did feel heartbroken. It's weird.
Could you imagine Timmy saying, if I didn't pay you, you wouldn't be around? Like, that is heartbreaking.
Oh, or the reverse role. My son pays me. Or however he worded that, right?
Right, like, right.
The only reason, I can eat is because, you know, my kid pays me money or something. I mean, like, wow.
Yeah, yeah. All of it. It's all wrapped up.
You know, and then he's telling his dad, like, Dad, you're the greatest. I love you, you know? And like, because kids, I think sons look up to their fathers.
Yeah.
And he's looking up to his father at the moment his father tells him, no, I'm a rodeo clown.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not what you think I am, you know? And then like the kid has that moment of, wow, my dad's a loser.
Right.
You know? And I don't mean that in a joking way. I mean that in like the most sincere way. So one thing I want to talk to you about is, I know you're a little bit thin on top.
Yeah. I shaved it all off. Yep.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I got to say, though, like, the shaved head I enjoy. But Ted, growing it long in the back. Come on. Come on. Would you do it? Would you do it for me?
No.
Are you serious?
No, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
There's too big of a gap in between where you have to explain what you're doing with hair.
You know, here's the thing. If it was the reverse,
yeah,
like it's long and then you shave it off, right? It's like, boom, it's instantaneous. But to get to the point of where you're growing it like the kid's dad, like you're talking like 9 months, right? You got to explain, yes. Like, you know, yeah, I got this horrible, like, male pattern baldness mullet. Like,
yes.
Minimum 9 months. And then once you achieve mulletness, then you're like...
Mulletude.
Yeah. Now you got to, like, sit there and be like, it's really like a bet, right?
Yes.
Like, the bet is not, I lost the bet, let me wait a year and a half for my hair to grow. The bet is, I lost the bet, let me shave my locks down to nothing because it's so instant. Well, since you won't do it, But all right, last thing. So Amazon original only in theaters.
Right.
How long do you think till it comes to streaming? I'm saying 2 weeks.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it's so funny you say that because I think, you know, The Farewell, the Asian American film, they fought hard to have a theatrical release, and actually streaming services started throwing money at them at the end of, I don't know, whatever festival they were at. And they went with A24 because A24 said, we'll give you a theatrical release. And that's what they're built for. But I love the idea of Amazon doing this. Amazon, it feels like Amazon has Disney square in their sights as far as like making, not making fun or just taking pot shots at Disney in general. They're both huge companies, but I did spend, and I guess we'll get into this later with The Boys. I spent part of the trip watching an episode a night of The Boys, and I don't know if you've seen it yet or not. Have you seen it?
I haven't heard it.
Yeah, we did that. It's The Boys. It's a superhero miniseries on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Okay.
So it is literally the best thing I've seen in this year, I think.
Are you serious? Oh, wow. Okay, we'll check it out.
Yeah, it's amazing. So you'll check it out and you'll let me know what you think about it. And
well, let's get to that when we talk about what we're watching. Yeah.
We'll talk about that later. But yeah, Amazon Studios, I think this is their another pot shot at Disney. So we'll see how it goes. But I think it's great that Shia LaBeouf has this chance to be cathartic and to express himself in this way. So I hope it's successful.
Yeah, it's cool. So, I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I mean, I definitely want to watch it. I think it looks awesome. But I...
Yeah. And I don't think you'll have to wait. You know, you won't have to wait long.
No. I think week two, maybe three at the tops, you know, yeah. And at the rate we see things, I mean, I'm thinking like 9 months from now. You know? But let's get to an interesting one. So Eddie Murphy. Dolomite is my name.
Dolomite is my name.
Do you know any history of this movie or?
Well, not of this movie, but Dolomite. I know that the whole idea of blaxploitation and that whole.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at.
That whole genre. Yeah.
Like back to the mid 70s.
I was somewhat of a fan of Pam Grier and Jackie Brown, that kind of stuff. And Quentin Tarantino's take on the blaxploitation film.
Blaxploitation. I had it too. Oh, yeah. Dude, that's hilarious.
We're very in sync. So I appreciate this is like a, and it felt like another idea, another kind of comeback, you know, that Honey Boy feels like Shia LaBeouf is making a comeback. And now Eddie Murphy has kind of been out of the spotlight for a while. And now he's with the hot new producer / streamer / distribution with Netflix. And I think he's done, I think Netflix with stars of this caliber, I think they only do multi project deals. So I think this is all rolled into, he's going to do another stand-up comedy that they're going to release exclusively on Netflix. So I'm very interested in seeing Eddie Murphy do a new stand-up in this day and age. If you see a 2020 Eddie Murphy stand-up special, I don't know if you've tried to watch Raw or Delirious anytime.
Oh, they're still amazing.
They're awesome. They're still amazing, but they're completely inappropriate. It's like you can't. You could probably watch about 5 minutes of it that you could laugh at.
I know, man. It's like it is so bad, but man, it is so like when funny. I was in high school, like me and my buddies would watch that, and our parents would be like, "You can't. Uh-huh. What are you doing? You can't be watching it because it was like on Showtime or something." You know?
Yeah. What color leather do you think he's going to be in this time? Because he did the red leather with Delirious, the blue leather with Raw, so now he's got to do like yellow leather or something.
Or we talked a couple weeks ago about, or no, I'm sorry, we talked to my father-in-law about when Obama had the tan suit. He's got to do tan leather, right?
Tan leather. But anyway, so Dolomite is my name. It, you know, it felt like Dolomite and the character that he's playing is making this triumphant comeback, or just overcoming these, insurmountable odds. So it really felt like the story behind these kind of fluff movies that were about sex and violence. It just, it gives so much more substance to it than like just a Dolomite movie, you know? And the whole idea that Dolomite is a character that he plays in between, like he's in character while he's not even play, you know, it added so many layers to the way that this could be explored that I was very interested in it.
And I felt that Dolomite as a character was not, you know, it was along what you were saying, his insurmountable odds and so on. And the odds are, when you look at Eddie Murphy getting older, it's his age that's kind of getting in the way. He's not the young comedian who's hip with a young audience. Now he's trying to connect with someone like, you know, I don't know, older people who kind of grew up in the 80s with him. And I also got the feel that this movie is kind of along the lines of Harlem Nights, where you have that large breadth of actor actress, the who's who of the black actor like scene. I mean, they kind of show everybody, you know, and it's in a way you kind of miss Red Fox, you know, because like he's not there, but you wish he was.
I'm just happy to see Wesley Snipes working. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But no, I think some of the things, though, like I said, is Eddie Murphy's just older and he's not as relevant as he used to be. And he's bringing himself back to relevance through a movie about a character who is bringing himself back to relevance. You know, it's kind of like,
right.
I don't know, what would you call it? Like a phoenix or something, you know, rising from the ashes.
Yeah.
Like Eddie Murphy has not been around for a long time. And all of a sudden here he is again. And he's, you know, seems pretty funny.
Yeah, no, it seems amazing. It feels great. You know, I think a lot of people, when you make the buckets of money that people make in Hollywood at the time that he was making it, you know, if you make enough money, you never have to work again. And you kind of enter this, we talk about it, that F you money. Like when you have that F you money and projects stop coming and you don't necessarily want to do things, then you don't have to do them. You know, you don't have to work for a year. You don't have to work for 5 years. And then once you don't have to work for a decade, then you're good to go for life. And you don't, you know, and then you can choose projects and you can choose what to do. And I think the funny thing we kind of poke fun at some people for is like when you see a famous actor in a commercial, you're like, oh, I didn't know they were in Hard Knocks that they needed to make some money, you know. They need to like do a commercial,
or they believe in the product, I guess. I don't know.
So this feels like it is the beginning of a comeback, a beginning of a big slate of things that's going to come out from Eddie Murphy. You know, Eddie Murphy doesn't have to do it, but he wants to do it. Netflix has, you know, a truckload of money that they'll back up to Eddie Murphy's place. And then they own the stuff that Eddie Murphy produces for them now. So if they ever lose the license for Raw and Delirious, I don't even know if they have those licenses.
Uh-oh.
But if they don't need them,
right.
You know? So they'll have this six-picture, six-project deal with Eddie Murphy of new 2019, 2020 Eddie Murphy stuff. And they'll have that in their coffers, and Beverly Hills Cop 4 or 5, whatever.
But I think you're right, though. I mean, like, when you've made so much money, and I think the funny thing is, like, if you think about it in the terms of somebody who founds a company or somebody who, like, creates, you know, I don't know, a product, or I don't even know what it is, but
yeah.
But somebody who's doing something because they're highly intelligent, they're good at what they do, and they can, you know, make a lot of money at that thing, you know, whatever that thing is. I mean, it's different for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you create a company and you sell it for, like, you know, I mean, Instagram is, I think, is a great idea, you know, or a great concept or a great example, right. You know? And you sell Instagram to Facebook for whatever $1 billion they sold it for.
Yeah.
And you're just this young guy. I mean, you could be done and never do anything again for the rest of your life. But if you're the kind of person who's so ambitious and so talented that you create a product like Instagram and you are able to sell it to a company like Facebook, I mean, are you really the kind of person who's going to say, I don't ever have, I could sit on the front porch and be lazy. I don't have to ever have to do everything, anything ever again. No, of course not.
Right.
You're just going to move on to the next company you're going to found or find. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. You're going to move on to the next company. But the thing is, though, now you get to do it with zero risk, you know? And yeah, I think it's what we said.
And zero risk and pressure. No pressure.
Because you got that FU money.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we said a few weeks ago with Tom Hanks and Mr. Rogers, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Tom Hanks doesn't need a role. He can pick and choose the roles he wants to play because, like, if somebody, you know, let me tell you, though, your kids want to get into acting. Somebody shows up and there's some crazy role for some thing that's just off the wall. And they're like, do I really have to do this? And you're like, yes, because this is the next step to the next step. Tom right. Hanks is already at the top of the pyramid, and he's like, well, I already did all those steps. I dressed up like a woman to get an apartment, you know, whatever it is, right? And that's exactly what we're talking about here. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But how about we move on to Last Christmas?
Okay, Last Christmas.
And the last trailer for the night.
The last trailer for the evening. And I will say, like, the programming, I threw in the Dolemite. So Dolemite is my contribution. We said Vincent gave us Honey Boy. But Anne is a special contributor, as always. She sent me this Last Christmas, and she said, Jimmy loves Game of Thrones, so you got to put Last Christmas in here and throw him some meat for Game of Thrones. Now that Game of Thrones is gone, all we can talk about are these actors that are released into the wild and have to do other things.
Come on. I can't believe Daenerys Targaryen electrocuted a lionfish.
I know. It's hard to believe.
Anne has her thumb on the pulse. Let's put it that way.
For somebody who doesn't listen to the podcast, except for, you know, most of it, you know, she definitely.
And the other side of it, though, I do like how she stated, you know, when asked, like, you know, if elves are cynical, and she said, yes. These are dark times.
These are dark.
I mean, come on. That's like a line right out of Game of Thrones.
Yes, it is. It is a beautiful movie. The trailer just plays it straight. They don't have to do much here. It's not heavy lifting. The story sells itself, right? Last Christmas, George Michael. I mean, you got to love George Michael's stuff. You know, it's going to have more George Michael songs in it, it says in the trailer. It's got, you know, heartthrobs abound. So
I just hope the people in Solvang, you know, California, for those not around where I live, but I hope the people in Solvang, California aren't listening to this watching the trailer, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Because when they give the dig on the year-round Christmas, you know, store, like, come on, man, there's a year-round Christmas store there. And you're telling people...
Well, Solvang is special.
Yeah. I just hope they don't take offense with the silly little Christmas shop, you know? Like, it is silly, but it goes on 365 days a year. You walk in, like, mid-July into the Christmas store in Solvang, and it's just, it does its thing, you know? It's Christmas. Yeah.
Of course.
It's what you expect it to be. So 27 seconds into the trailer, when the Asian woman is, you know, bitching at her about being late or whatever it was, and she's
Michelle Yeoh, yes.
And she says, like, oh, Father Christmas, save me from here. What is she saying, man? I played that 50 times. Like, dude, I'll tell you.
I don't
when
know.
You have a British accent sometimes, like, you think it's English. It's not English, it's British.
Oh, for sure.
God, I can't understand them.
We speak American.
America. So, Last Christmas, what's is the title something to do with her sickness?
Well, I don't know. I'm guessing it does. I'm guessing the sickness is...
It's progressed or...
Yeah. From... No, I think she was sick last Christmas. Maybe that's what that was.
Oh, okay. Because...
But it's also the name of the George Michael song.
They're not naming a movie after George Michael's song.
Yes, they are.
George Michael's song is going to support the movie.
Well, they are leaning into George Michael's song, George Michael's songs as love songs. Yes, they are. They had a whole card to it. They had a card dedicated with the music of George Michael.
Wow. I mean, I saw that, but
yeah.
Do you think they built a movie around George Michael, or George Michael is there to support the movie?
No. I think they built the movie. It's a good movie. They needed this song, and maybe the estate said, "All right, we'll give you, you know, we'll sell you the song at the, you know, typical going rate of whatever hundreds of thousands of dollars it'll cost to put this song in there. But guess what? We're gonna throw in the rest of his songs too at a discounted rate, and we'll give you a package deal, $500,000, and you can have all of his songs."
Okay, George Michael aside. So you brought in an interesting angle. So I was thinking it was either this is her last Christmas because she's dying.
Oh, no.
Or it was about last Christmas. But then what you said was she was sick last Christmas. It's a reflection on last Christmas. And now she's in this Christmas reflecting back on last Christmas. And I don't know. What do you think? Which Christmas is it?
So I had that quick moment of thinking of the morbidity of it, right? Because if you say...
Oh, no, I did too, yeah.
But the part of what they did in either the cutting or maybe the executive notes, who knows how it shook out, but the idea of when she bumps into Henry Golding that second time...
Sure.
And then she says that we did this last Christmas, it kind of diffuses any thought of this being her last Christmas, or at least it does in my mind.
Oh, okay.
You know, it harkens back to the previous Christmas, which being last Christmas, and not saying this is my last Christmas.
There's always the one line that makes it like that's their out.
Yeah, it kind of diffuses the whole thing. They're like, oh, didn't you hear that? This is not morbid at all. We have to talk about her sickness because it's a big part of the movie. But we diffuse all of that by saying,
sure,
we did this last year. We did this last Christmas. And then we show the uplifting stuff with the food bank at the end and everything, you know?
Yeah. The tattooed saint on the forehead. Yeah.
Yeah. The saint, you know, tattooed on your and how she starts singing. And, you know, by the end, you know, the whole character arc has been expositioned through this trailer, but it's still something you want to see. You know, there's still going to be bumps in the road in their relationship and getting together, and her.
It looks cute for sure. Yeah.
Not wanting to get around that you know, and it's like, this is a full all around. The whole family wants to see this, maybe except for Bryce.
Exactly. Yeah, so it's like last year we had Christmas Chronicles, this year we have Last Christmas, right? All right, yeah. Any final thoughts on Last Christmas?
No, I'm so glad so my last thought on it is a non-comment.
A non-comment, okay.
You know, as I am...
Whatever, I don't even know what that means. As I discussed, sure.
Well, you'll know as I start to explain... There's a whole bunch of movies coming out of the Asian Pacific Islanders. And, you know, when we have Asian Pacific Islander Month, I was involved in that very deeply. And we had Crazy Rich Asians, and we had The Farewell, and we had a bunch of movies that came out.
Yeah.
That were not stereotypical, but they were sold as Asian American movies. Now, this one has Michelle Yeoh and Henry Golding, and they play Asian characters, but they pay no special homage to the fact that they're Asian, which I think is a selling point, a bonus that kind of just allows you to just accept that this is a world where, you know, a more open, more accepting world where an Asian American or an Asian leading man can be a heartthrob. You know what I mean? And
he's a good looking guy, though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, he's amazing. And And I think it's just it is another step in the progress to not have to call it out.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah, yeah.
And they're not calling this Asian Christmas or something. You know what I mean? You don't have to put the label on it. So the non-mention of the Asian Americans and the Asianness in this trailer is a bonus, I think, to the whole idea of equality.
For sure. I got you. All right. So moving on, like you already mentioned the soundtrack. I was going to say the soundtrack is good, especially with all the different songs and George Michael and stuff. I mean, like, yeah, the soundtrack's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, so if you're done with that, what I have is what we're watching at this point.
Let's get into what we're watching.
All right. So we had a few weeks and actually a long period of time to talk about what we're watching. So what have you been watching?
Mm-hmm. So as I said, The Boys was the best thing that I watched.
The Boys. I'm going to check that out because you said it was so good.
The Boys. I think it's either 6 or 8 episodes, an hour each.
And what is the network?
It is on Amazon. Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime, okay.
So it's on Amazon Prime, exclusively on Amazon Prime. It is a remake, not a remake, but is a adapted from a comic book series. So the comic book series, you know, it really pokes fun at the idea of celebrity. And so here's my quick pitch for somebody who hasn't seen it or hasn't done it.
I need a quick pitch.
Yeah, so imagine if Marvel and Disney were actual real superheroes.
Wait, if Marvel and Disney were superheroes, what does that mean?
So if Marvel superheroes...
Like companies?
No, if Marvel superheroes were real life...
Oh, if they're real life, okay.
And Disney or a production company was in charge of also making movies about these real life superheroes, as well as the feats of superheroic strength and speed that they do, if they were in charge of all of that. So in actuality, there is a level of celebrity that is taken to this next level where they are working together and they aren't superhuman, but they are held on a pedestal because they are actors of a certain caliber. You talked about Tom Hanks,
sure.
You know, you talk about, you know, Robert Downey Jr. You know, if Robert Downey Jr. could also save lives as well as make the movies, but, you know, the Marvel production company or whatever production company is in charge of them said, like, you can't always save lives because you need to make movies, you know? It's kind of like this amazing mix of this story of what that would be like in the real world.
Yeah, I gotcha. I gotcha.
And the whole idea of these anti-heroes that pop up and how bad, you know, like, who's a bad guy, who's a good guy. And by the end of it, the way that it leaves you with so much confusion about who you've rooted for, like, yes, you see character arcs and character arcs in shows, especially series, are kind of false, you know, like you don't know how they're going to end. But even beyond character arcs, if you can feel after 2 episodes that you hate a character or you peg a character as like, oh, this is the person and I hate this person because of who he is and what he does. And he is a despicable, horrible person. But then by the end of 6 episodes, you feel bad for that person. You empathize with that person and you cheer for the person. Then you have put yourself in such a state of confusion that it is exhilarating to talk about the series with other people that have experienced the series, you know?
I think that gets into, and I don't mean to cut you off because I know you probably have other things you were watching, but I think that gets back into Barry.
Yeah, okay. You've been watching Barry? You watched?
Yeah, so we're 1.5, so 2 seasons of Barry. We have, well, season 1 we're done with, and we're 4 episodes into season 2.
Did that first half of the season, did it pick up?
Have you seen it?
I only saw the first season.
Okay.
But last time we talked, you had watched the first half of the season and the hype was too much.
So you're asking if the second half of the first season pick up?
Yes. We're a spoiler.
It picked up enough for me to get into the second season, yes.
When he shoots his friend.
Well, what I'm getting at is... just what you said when you get to rooting for people who are despicable.
Yeah.
This is another show like Dexter and Breaking Bad and all the shows that have been out there that are critically acclaimed. I've seen and I enjoy and I think are great shows. And I go to bed flogging myself because I'm rooting for the most terrible people, the most horrible humans. You know, I'm rooting for to say like, well, you know, like, I guess it's self-preservation or it's the killer who kills killers or he's just selling drugs to make himself for cancer, you know, and all these different shows.
Yeah.
I would say story-wise, yeah, Barry's pretty cool. Henry Winkler, I think, is doing a great job and all this stuff. I mean, the show's a good show. What I would say is,
yeah,
it's another one of those you find yourself rooting for a despicable person, you know, and and maybe that's the brilliance in the writing.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's like you watch these shows and then you think to yourself, like, cognitively, you try to rise above and you think, like, why is this something that I think is a concept or an idea? Like, the guy kills a cop and he does all this stuff and you're like, I get it. He's showing people, and I know you haven't seen it, but oh, maybe I shouldn't have said, oh my God, you haven't seen it.
Oh,
spoiler alert.
I don't care about spoiler alerts. I don't care about it.
No, but you're watching and there's this one scene that he's getting into, right? And you're thinking like, don't do it. Don't do it. And he doesn't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him and you see the struggle. You see the...
But you see that in season one. Season one, he has plenty of people that he kills out of necessity. And you know, the machine takes over.
No, this is worse. This is worse.
He takes a deep breath. Okay, great.
Totally worse. And you see him like begging, like, don't make me do this. Right? He's begging. But he can't say why. And he's just like, okay, well, you didn't go for it. So
You didn't promise.
And then what you said, the machine takes over, right?
Right.
Yeah. But okay, so Barry. And then I have a bit of a theme, a two-part theme.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
So let's see if you can get both parts. I don't know if you've seen either movie or maybe you saw both. Hey, did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I did see Bohemian Rhapsody, yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Loved it.
The one complaint I have is the sound mixing.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So I would have loved had the sound mixing used more of the front mains on the speakers and the stereo for the music.
Oh, okay.
Rather than incorporating the center channel. So I think if it was when they play the music, the actual, like when they were at Wembley Stadium and all that kind of stuff, if the music actually just came from the stereo speakers that have the best drive, rather than using the center channel, I mean, like...
What did you watch it on though?
HBO. HBO. Yeah.
HBO streaming. HBO Now.
HBO Now through the Roku. Yeah.
Okay. That might be. Oh, but you've heard other things.
It might down mix it to 5 channel regardless, you're saying.
Yeah.
I gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would get the.
Like a Blu-ray would probably do a proper.
A Blu-ray.
Okay.
Yeah. A Blu-ray would be a better sound mix.
And you know what? Maybe I'll do that just to compare the two.
Do it. Do it just to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good idea. Otherwise, awesome movie. I mean, like, me and Clarissa just totally loved it. I think I didn't go back to listen to our episode where we covered it, but I hate to say I'm right, but I think I'm right. Because you said they weren't going to get into the AIDS and they weren't going to get into, and they were just going to end it at Wembley. Like, when he goes out to the stage, it was going to be over. Dude, they played the whole concert. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That was awesome. Because I remember that as a kid, well, not as a kid, high school kid anyway.
Yeah.
Watching Live Aid. And I mean, that was incredible.
Well, the minute we finished the movie, we watched it. We watched the YouTube clip from the actual performance just to see how well they did to redo it.
Oh, how'd they do? I didn't do that. That's a good idea.
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing how well they basically took this footage from the actual live performance and they went shot for shot. Wow. And it felt very, very real.
Oh, I gotta do that. Yeah. I don't know how I didn't think of that. And then last night we watched
that was all Anne. Anne does that regardless. She does that for everything. So
yeah, you know what's funny though? You know what's funny? I typically do. On this one, I didn't. Mm-hmm. So that was Thursday night we did Bohemian Rhapsody. Friday night, last night, we did A Star Is Born. Have you seen that one?
Okay. We saw A Star Is Born as well, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Another good one.
Which do you like better?
That was the exact question Clarissa and I asked each other. Which did you like better? Mm-hmm. I think both our consensus was Bohemian Rhapsody because just the mere fact it was a true story.
Yeah.
A Star Is Born was great, though. I mean, I think, again, getting to the sound mixing, I checked to see how the sound was mixed. It was more front stereo, like primary, like speaker, whatever you want to call it. It was more that focused.
Yeah.
And they took the sound away from the center channel. We watched it on HBO as well. Everything was the same, but they took it away from the center channel more, it seemed. And the sound was a little bit better as far as the music was concerned. Yeah, Lady Gaga was like, I mean, her voice is just incredible. Yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
You know, and the funny thing is, like, you're watching it and you're thinking, is Bradley Cooper this good on the guitar and singing? Or is this pure acting? Because if he's this good, why is this guy not like a musician? Like, I would, rockabilly blues country western style, like I love that music, you know. That's some of my favorite music is like that kind of stuff that he was playing,
right?
And you know, and I was kind of surprised that the Lady Gaga, well, okay, it's Lady Gaga, which I get, but as far as how the movie played out, I was surprised that it went more like the hip-hop sort of side of things as far as her, I don't even know if you want to call it hip hop, but it was, you know, where he was the country western blues guy and she was more like the hip hop, I don't know, hip hop or the pop star, you know, because she kind of started off as like the bluesy country western star, whatever you want to call it, you know?
Yeah.
I'll have to say though, man, like when he talked about hanging himself in the room and the fan came down.
Yeah.
To me, that was the premonition that he's going to hang himself. So when he did, or well, when that part of the movie came out, spoiler alert, but when that part of the movie came out, yeah. Like I wasn't really surprised. Like I was like, I think that was like the premonition of the movie where they were saying like, hey, here's an inside scoop. He's going to do it later, you know?
Right.
Like
foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing. Yeah. I saw that coming. And then when he backed out the truck and did, I was like, yeah, here it comes, you know? And it kind of sucked and, you know, and I think it was like, and I've never seen the Liza Minnelli version of it, but at the end in the credits, when I watched the credits, it said that it was based on like the screenplay and blah 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 and all this stuff, and I can only assume that the Liza Minnelli Star Is Born is the same,
right?
I mean, I don't know, you know, I mean, I'm just speaking from ignorance here, but but let's assume it is. And, you know, people are probably telling me right now, yes, Jim, it is. But the one thing about it, though, that I would say is that it's like the feeling and everything that like Kurt Cobain and all these actors, all these musicians that have killed themselves over the years and, you know, the suicidal things that have happened.
Right.
Even Amy Winehouse. I mean, she wasn't necessarily like an active.
It wasn't a full-on suicide.
Suicide, but more a passive suicide, right? Like, she just, like, drank herself to death and drugged herself to death. And, you know, but you get these people that have these issues, you know? And like, they have so much shame that they internalize that they just can't get beyond it. And it's like, you know, like the Bradley Cooper character, you know, Jackson, it's like the shame he felt that he couldn't shake his addiction. action was so great that the only answer was, you know, like, baby, I can't quit and I don't want to disappoint you, so I'm just going to kill myself.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, like, to think of it in those terms is just incredible. And, you know, how many people can't comprehend with that stuff, you know? I mean, to include the Lady Gaga character, she's like, you know, she was backing him through the whole thing, and it was unbelievable, I thought, you know? It was great.
Yeah, it was an emotional journey, for to say the least. But when he does kill himself, to me that felt like it takes the wind out of the audience so viscerally that it almost makes it knocks off whatever highs and lows you have throughout the movie. So that's part of the reason I asked you which one is better, because I, you know, Anne and I came to the same conclusion. We watched at the same time frame Bohemian Rhapsody and The Star is Born.
Okay.
And you almost feel like Bohemian Rhapsody is a better movie, and you can't discount too much the ending. And this is what Hollywood always talks about, and you can't say that they're wrong. You know, you want a happy ending. You know, at the end of these two movies, both the main characters die, right? Like, we know that Freddie Mercury dies at the end of the movie, but we don't focus on it. We're focused on the performance, and we're focusing on that. And kind of what I was getting at when I said we wouldn't go into it was, we didn't have too many scenes of him wasting away. You know, he kind of,
yeah.
He ended in triumph, and that whole concert was a triumphant return to the stage. You know, like, even in, you know.
Oh, I follow you. So on the one hand, Bohemian Rhapsody is like, he's dying, but it's an upswing to the end. And the other one, Jackson's dying, but it's a downswing to the end.
Right, exactly.
I think you articulated what I was feeling, but I didn't realize that I was thinking of it in those terms.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we give executives and you know, people paying to make movies, you know, we give them a hard time, and they want to end on a high note. They want to end on something happy. And when we talked to James about it, you know, like, even on a sad movie, you kind of have to sell the hope. You sell the happiness into a trailer, even if the happiness and the hope isn't there at the end of the movie. So it, you know, partly to preserve the story, partly preserved to not have the spoilers, but also to keep people, you know, if you tell people that Jackson dies at the end of the movie in your trailer, you're not going to get as many people to go see that movie, and they will be worse off for not seeing it, you know? So you kind of have to sugarcoat it a little bit for them to get them there. And then when they're let down at the end a little bit, that's okay. It's okay to be let down a little bit.
You know, and now that I think about it, the two movies I know Bradley Cooper from are American Sniper, mm-hmm, and The Star is Born, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
I mean, you're watching American Sniper. Like, the dude saved how many, like, lives and so on in Iraq, and, you know, he's part of, like, you know, these special forces teams or SEAL teams, whatever they were. And,
yeah,
you know, and he winds up trying to help veterans with mental disabilities or PTSD or whatever it is.
Right.
And the guy kills him.
Right.
And then the end of the movie is, like, his death and, like, the funeral procession, and, like, here me and Clarissa are on the sofa, like, bawling our eyes out, right?
Yeah, of course.
And here we are, like, watching Star is Born, and it's the same thing, but with music, and you're like, oh my God, like, this is horrible, you know? And, like, you're crying, and it's like, it's just terrible and all this. I mean, great movie, but when you watch, like, Queen, Freddie Mercury, and Bohemian Rhapsody,
yeah,
the next day we're cooking dinner, and it's like, Clarissa is like, hey, put on some music, and I'm like, you know, we will rock you, you know, like, we're just jamming, you know, like, Another One Bites the Dust, boom, 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 you know, like, we're just, and you're just, yeah, like, pumped for, like, Queen music.
Right, right, right.
You know, and I think that's the, like, I'm not pumped for, like, if that soundtrack, like, if I listened to the soundtrack for A Star is Born, I'd be, like, cooking dinner crying.
It's the onions. It's the onions.
Yeah, you know, right. It's the onions.
I'm chopping onions.
But, Jim, you're cutting tomatoes. But no, I mean, the thing is, though, like, I would be like, oh, yeah, listen to the music. Yeah, we'll put that on. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm so sad, you know. But because you put on Queen, like, you're almost in celebration of what a great band they were.
Right, right.
Yeah, no, I totally get that, man. But, yeah, so I think the two themes were obviously the easy one is music.
Right.
And then maybe the less obvious, but I don't know, whatever, but it's premature death.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and I think both of them had that too, because Freddie Mercury in 91 dying of complications of AIDS, I think he had pneumonia or something. And then Bradley Cooper's character, Jackson, of his alcoholism and drug abuse and the shame he felt and mental illness and everything that led to suicide.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was really somber. I mean, like that was harsh.
Now, since we're talking about themes, I did forget to mention the theme from our previous episode, our episode 82.
That's right. We didn't do that. So let's cover that, because I'm sure somebody out there is calling us to task.
So just a quick recap. That was Zombieland, Double Tap, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, and Jojo Rabbit. Do you got a guess?
And I had about 3 weeks, and I had to think about it. I have no clue, Ted. So
I will just hit it up with you. We won't spend too much time on it, but I did think...
Zombies and Mr. Rogers. I don't know.
Zombie, Mr. Roger, Hitler, and Jay and Silent Bob. So to me, it's about role models. Every movie has this role model in it.
Oh, okay. Wait, what's the role model in Zombieland?
Zombieland, they all have like, Woody Harrelson is like the paternal figure to this crew.
Okay, sure.
I don't know. That's what I thought.
Well, Mr. Rogers is a role model for sure. Okay.
Okay, so Zombieland's the biggest stretch. Mr. Rogers is a role model, and Jay and Silent Bob, they're trying to reconnect with a daughter he didn't know he had. And then Jojo Rabbit, it's clear that, you know, Adolf Hitler is the role model for this boy.
You and I was just saying, you hate, I mean, and hate's a strong word. You hate that Hitler is a role model. Right?
Yes.
Okay, role but models. But then also, I gotcha. I never models. Would have picked up on role models.
And then to cap off what we're watching this week, I did binge the first season of Rick and Morty.
Oh, okay. How is it?
So it is not safe for work. It is not safe for children.
NSFW.
And the wives probably won't like it. Well, Anne, I showed Anne like 5 minutes of one episode just because I thought this section was extremely funny. And she didn't want to hear about it, didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to say anything about it.
Clarissa can dip into the vulgar land. So Clarissa is not like, I mean, she will definitely go down that rabbit hole. So
the main character gets molested by a jelly bean.
All right, I'll show. So wait, what is it on? What platform?
For it might be on Canopy. I rented mine for the library.
Wait, getting molested by Canopy? Wait, what? By a library? Wait, it's not molested by the library. A jelly bean?
No.
And the library sanctions this? My public it's dollars art. Are paying.
So yes, I was at a birthday party, and I was talking to some guy, and I had mentioned that I had a podcast, and he goes, oh, a friend of mine has a podcast too. And I was like, oh, really? What's your,
doesn't every friend of everybody,
right? What's your friend's podcast? He goes, oh, it's a little podcast. You know, I was like, who's your friend? And Dan Harmon. And I was like, oh God, of course, the creator of Community and Rick and Morty. I run into the guy that, you know, that helps, you know, Dan Harmon on his business planning and stuff, you know.
That's awesome. But did you see that Canopy had Under the Silver Lake
And I know.
So all those shows, all those A24s we've been doing and stuff, like I get an email, I'm like, holy cow, that's solid. You know, like they have a lot of good stuff on there.
And it's so funny, just because of the library, you know, and my children love the library, but my daughter doesn't like the streaming service. She'd much rather look, Audrey'd much rather watch, you know, Disney Now until Disney Plus comes out, and Netflix, and Amazon, and Hallmark Channel. The Hallmark Channel is our only like vice that's very, very specific niche.
And why do you think that is with her?
I don't think she likes the platform, the way that it's presented. It's kind of like a very simple, kind of austere, stoic kind of platform. It doesn't have a lot of, you know, flashiness to the way that you log into it. So it's just the overall look.
Oh, so you don't think it has to do with her friends and like social stuff?
It might be part of that.
Like,
you know,
you're like, I'm watching Netflix. You're on the library. You know, like that kind of a thing.
It might play into a little bit of that, but it was funny to hear her say like it doesn't have the content, and I'm like, well, we haven't really looked at it, you know, so it's like it has some.
Well, it doesn't have the content. I mean, she's right, depending on what you're looking for.
Yeah. Right.
But if you're willing to look for the slightly less trendy, dude, there is a lot of, there's a lot of recent and current trendy stuff. It just might not be the big studio stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, again, like I said, I mean, under the Silver Lake, right? A24, you know, like art house film type things. But yeah, you're not going to get Marvel, and you're not going to get DC, and you're not going to get whatever the bigger blockbuster things that might be on HBO or something. But otherwise,
right,
there's a lot of content. And I bet, you know, if you really dove into it and were patient enough, you could find some really good stuff.
And I think to me, it kind of drives into the whole idea of what Amazon Prime's doing. Like, you already pay for it, so you might as well use it. You know what I mean? The library is there. You already pay for the library. You might as well use it as much as you can, you know? So,
yeah, I mean,
I'm definitely going to keep using that.
All right, Ted, any last thoughts? Otherwise, let's get out of here, man. I think I'm done for the night.
Cool. Me too. How'd your beer finish up?
Oh, beer finished great. I mean, this.
Oh, yeah. That's a solid standard, that Valhalla.
You know, the big thing that I think is, unless, like, when you're looking at an IPA, unless you're getting at, you know, anything that's, you know, hop stupid, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you're going to do anything like, you know, ridiculous. I mean, I find that IPAs nowadays, they kind of follow the formula. They know what they're doing. You know, you make the beer people want to drink, and that's kind of where we are. You know, like a little bit floral on the front, a little bit bitter on the back, and people get their beers and they have their ever so slight differential in flavor, but more or less they're the same thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, and that's what I get out of this one. Like,
cool.
I don't mean to dismiss it as not good. I mean, it's great. I think it's a really solid IPA, but I think it's, again, along those lines, I think it's a typical IPA that you would expect. So, like, if you like IPAs, you won't be disappointed.
Right.
Yeah. How about yourself?
Awesome. I will say the same thing about Melvin.
Melvin.
Melvin's 2x4. It is packaged very well, has some great marketing. And I think that's where, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, I think marketing is becoming more and more important, especially in the IPA sphere. This.
How big was yours?
Mine was a little 12 ouncer. But I was at 9.9, so I think, you know.
That's like 1.6.
In the last quote on here, it says, if your beer is not madness, it's not beer. And yes, it's a very good IPA. It is a double IPA. It is a full-bodied. But you're right. It is in the strain of IPAs, and there's only so much variation you can do with an IPA that doesn't disparage what an IPA should give the expectations of an IPA drinker, you know?
And I think my last thought with IPAs and how hops and beer is if you're kind of new to the beer realm and IPA realm, which I would say maybe younger drinkers might be, but older drinkers, like IPAs have been around long enough to where if you're an older drinker, older 35, 40, 45, you know, whatever it is, you know, 50.
Yeah.
Like, you've been drinking beer long enough to where you've had a lot of good IPAs. If we're, you know, like, I was thinking of looking at, like, something chewy tonight, like a stout of sorts. And I'm like, man, it's summer, man. Those beers are too big, you know? Too heavy.
Yeah.
But if you're looking at, like, you know, you're new to the game, IPAs, you know, and you're coming from, like, I don't know, Natty Light because you just graduated college, you got your first engineering job, and you can now afford like better beers, so you start buying better beer and all this stuff. I think the big thing about it is that these bigger beers and these IPAs and everything, the thing is, it's like it's gonna hit your palate,
yeah,
and it's gonna like strike you in a way that you're not used to, but then give it a year, 2 years, and you're gonna be like, it's all the same,
right?
Like, a Citra hop, oh, a Mosaic hop, sure, whatever, you know.
It's like a fan. This couple was next to me while I was picking my beer, and they were looking at the Oscar Blue can of Bliss.
Oh, I got that in the fridge right now.
Hazy IPA. And they looked, they were looking at it. They were kind of, you know, debating it between the two of them. And I was debating my stuff. And I looked over, I was like, oh, can of Bliss. That's a good hazy. You know, it's not far off from these other, you know, Hazy Day from, which is Golden Road, yeah. I think, you know, but it is a good solid, you know, IPA, especially the hazies. And they were like, all right, you sold us. I was like, sweet.
You know? Well, it's funny too. Like I go in the store today and I see the Oscar Blues there, and they're from Colorado, and we were just in Colorado.
I know.
And it's on sale. It's a 15 pack that's less expensive than a 12 pack.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I was like, well, for 15 beers, sure, you know? And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, you know, it's a little nostalgia. We were just in Colorado, even though it's from Longmont, Colorado, which is
yeah,
the other side of the Rockies. But I'm like, okay, sure, we'll get it from Colorado and save some money because it's a little bit on sale. And, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, it was great, you know? Cause, and so we have all the, it's like a sampler pack. We have all the Oscar Blues in our.
Oh, cool. Well, one last thing. When we're up in Los Gatos, there's actually a brewery in Los Gatos. It's called Loma, L-O-M-A.
Loma.
So I stopped in for a beer up there, and I was like, oh, just give me a little sampler because my son's just using a restroom, you know? And they're like, well, it's still happy hour. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's, you know, 6:15. It's, you know, it's happy hour is over, whatever. And they're like, I'll still give you a happy hour price. Just take a pint. So they gave me the pint of their IPA, and it had blueberry notes. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. You know, blueberry notes, but they're not overpowering with the blueberry. You know, you kind of need some either sessions kind of IPA or some kind of, like you said, the floral thing or a fruity thing to kind of set yourself apart. So to have a blueberry note in an IPA that isn't overbearing was really nice.
And I guess the final thing we'll talk about.
I promise I won't.
So in Leadville, they had periodic brewing.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. PB, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, what's the
lead?
Lead. Yeah. PB is lead.
Lead.
And periodic brewing, and they, you know, that was the brewery and stuff. So I thought that was very clever. It was kind of like a double, triple entendre kind of a thing.
Well played, Leadville.
You know, yeah, that was a very cool name of a brewery for what they had to offer and serve. And, oh, and the beer, I mean,
yeah,
I had a, well, actually, me and Clarissa had a Belgian triple, and they kind of play off of the periodic brewing and the periodic table and the chemistry, and, you know, they kind of play off the little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So what they'll do is they'll give you, like, I think I got a 10, no, I think I got 10, no, I got a 12 ounce of the Belgian triple.
Uh-huh.
So I thought, you know, get me the 8 ounce for my wife. So I get the 8 ounce for Clarissa.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they give it to you in the tulip glasses, but the tulip glasses are kind of designed like beakers with the sizes on the side, right?
Oh, neat.
So I give Clarissa like a half a beer, essentially, and she's like, why so little? I said, just enjoy it, you know? And so she's drinking it and stuff, and she goes, oh my God, I don't think I'm going to finish. It was 14% beer.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'm like, and I told her, I said, there's no way you're going to finish a full beer of this. Like, right. That's why I gave you 8 ounces, you know, because you would be wasted. And she was wasted. So anyway, yeah, I mean, like Pyrotic Brewing, give them a shout out. They were really cool. No free beer or anything, unfortunately, but
right.
But yeah,
right.
I mean, the whole Leadville scene and all that stuff is cool. Very depressed town, unfortunately, but like, man, the whole race series, anybody out there who's a runner or mountain biker, I would highly recommend the Leadville race series. Mm-hmm. Professionally done, man. It is so awesome. I can't wait to get back next year.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's the final of the Leadville training and racing, and
until January, right? You'll start training in January again.
Well, we're doing some rides and training, and you know, just to stay like, just to maintain like a level of fitness. Right. But yeah, it'll ramp up again probably in the next like 4 months or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So looking forward to it. You know, now it's awesome. Time to like drink beer and I haven't slowed down on that, but time to drink beer and watch movies and get into trailers.
Awesome.
All right, Ted.
Let's get
the hell out of here.
All right.
All right, man. Later.
Bye. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.